Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about pet care on the show today, and beginning by talking about dogs a bit. And we'll start by talking about books for animal lovers. And Patricia McConnell should know, because she knows a whole lot about animals and she knows a whole lot about books. Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, international speaker, author of several guides on training and behavior problems. Some real dandies there. And she probably won't talk much about her own, but she should. But as the holidays draw near, it's a perfect time to think about books. What are you trying to teach your dog? Let us know how we can help you find a gift for an animal lover in your life. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Patricia McConnell, great to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, it's my pleasure, always.
You have a list of great books to give to animal lovers this season. And, well, let's just start. Tell us about the books you chose. You've got some dandies from
the sound of it. An hour's worth of books to talk about, Larry. So if you were thinking of calling it, no, I'm just teasing. But there's so much out there. So I promise not to talk too fast, but I'm so excited. There's so many great holiday gift books, or books everybody needs to gift themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we should all give ourselves a holiday gift. One of them, actually, we talked about last time I was in the studio. It's called Dog Smart by Jennifer Holland. It's about canine cognition.
Great book.
Isn't it great? Larry loved it. I loved it. She's one of those great science writers who goes everywhere, immerses herself in the ocean, and, you know, she just does it all, right? She's fearless.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful book if you're interested in canine cognition. There's another book that came out this year that is one of my absolute favorites. It's called Manage It, A Hack for Improving Your Dog's Performance. And it is, I love this book. And here's a quick example of why. You know how the advice when you get a puppy is like, you should crate train it and you should teach the puppy to be happy in a crate at night, right? So it won't pee somewhere. And she's like, no, put it in the bed with you. And dog lovers everywhere are like, we love you. We love you. She's like, your puppy's going to be, you know, it's been sleeping with warm bodies, right? Put it beside the warm body. She talks about how to avoid accidents. But the whole book is full of what professional dog trainers do all the time, which is manage a behavior problem, often rather than try to, quote, train out of it. Another one by a dear friend and colleague, Zazie Todd, it's called Bark, The Science of Helping Your Anxious, Fearful, or Reactive Dog. Zazie is she's just one of the best. She's so good. She's so thoughtful. She knows the science, but she makes it so relatable and easy to read about. Again, it's called Bark, The Science of Helping Your Anxious, Fearful, or Reactive Dog. Another one, Canine Enrichment for the Real World by Ali Bender. It's another great book about keeping our dogs happy and content. You know, we've taken away a lot of stimulation out of their life. You know, we just have. Yeah. It's just the way it is. They live in houses. We control everything. We take them on leash walks, you know. But so this is a wonderful book to have a healthier, happier, and a dog with fewer behavioral problems. Again, that's Canine Enrichment for the Real World. There's one more dog-related, and then I'm going to go to animals.
Okay.
I have a few more. There's one more dog-related book that is just gorgeous. It's basically a photo book with some short essays. It's called Abandoned. Abandoned by Catherine Carver. She spent years taking photographs of dogs who just came into the shelter.
Hmm.
And then a year later, she takes a photograph of them. And the differences are
monumental,
stunning. And the photo, so there's a little essay about each dog. But she's a professional photographer, and it is stunning. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. So if people are interested in like, well, what else? That's not enough, Tricia. What else is out there? Go to dogwise.com. Dogwise.com. It's one of my partners, so I'm, you know, I'm invested a little bit.
Sure.
But they are basically the Amazons, except they're wonderful, lovely people of the dog world. So those are all dog-related, but let me open it up to two books that I absolutely love that are about animals and animal behavior. The most important one that came out, I think it was this year, and it might have been last year. It's called An Immense World by Ed Yong. He is a science writer. He is one of the best. This is a book about how our reality is just a tiny, tiny slice of reality, that our perceptual boundaries create a world where we only hear, see, smell some things, and then we learn about all the other ways animals, the reality that other animals live in. And it's fascinating. It was a New York Times bestseller. It's a big read, you know, but it's, oh, it's a wonderful book. And then my friend and colleague, Franz de Waal, one of the country's greatest animal behavior researchers, wrote, one of his last book was, Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? His first book, decades ago, was Chimpanzee Politics. He's
Remember
just
that?
A wise, wonderful man. It's just a tragedy that we lost him in March. So two fiction books, though, for animal lovers. And this is, oh, I'm so excited about this. I haven't read it yet. I have it. I'm so excited. It's called Familiaris by David Wroblewsky. David Wroblewsky wrote a famous book called The Story of Edgar Sawtell, about a man and his dog. Do you remember that, Larry?
Oh, yes, very much. Had him on the show.
Yes, I love that you did. Well, you need to have him again, although this book is going crazy. I think it's another tome. He does not write short books. It's like 400-something pages. But I actually fangirled him. I was giving a seminar here in Madison. I had read his book and just thought he was one of the best authors I'd read. He came in and said, I have a dog question for you. And I literally was like fanning my face, like fangirl. I was like, it's David Wroblewsky. So new book, Familiaris. Do not want to miss that one. And then this is an oldie but a goodie, or a set of oldies. Who can forget James Herriot? You know, a lot of people haven't read him, right? A lot of people, the TV series is out.
Yeah.
The books are absolutely.
I loved all of them.
And he, you know, I went back and read some of them before I started on my novel, and he is a great, he was a great writer.
Yeah.
They are really, really well written, and they're charming and lovely and wonderful. So I have one more. Do I have time?
Have one
I been,
more.
I feel greedy. So one more. And this is actually something that relates to Giving Tuesday. There's a book called Love Has No Age Limit, a booklet that Karen London and I wrote together, designed for people who are bringing home a non-puppy, an adolescent, an older dog, a mature dog. Because there were no, when we wrote this, there were no books out there about what do you do when you're bringing home an 8-month-old dog or a 4-year-old dog. These dogs have histories behind them. And they're not little blank tabula roses, right? They're not little 8-, 9-week, 12-week-old puppies. So all kinds of new challenges come up. We have kept costs down so far in that people can buy it in bulk and donate it to their favorite shelter or rescue. And on this Giving Tuesday, December 3rd, there's another sale on it. So you can buy, hopefully people will jump on, go to my website, buy a bunch of these copies, whatever you can afford. They're on sale. And they're pretty close to basically what they cost to make, if not less. I probably shouldn't even look at the numbers. But that's the hope. I just was last week at Dane County Humane Society and donated a bunch of them and some of my other books. So that's the hope. People will jump online on my website, Giving Tuesday, December 3rd, and buy a whole bunch of copies of Love Has No Age Limit and donate it to your shelter of rescue of choice.
Oh, that's wonderful. And we have that we have your list. I
don't think you do, but I can get it to you because I just wrote it this morning.
Well, you do that.
I can fix that. I can do that.
Okay.
We can take care of that.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today. It's so much fun talking with her. We've gone through a nice list of books. We can talk about gifts for animals as well. And you can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. What if you want to give your dog a gift for the holidays? What makes a good gift for Lila, who I like a lot?
Lila.
Or Fido, or whoever.
What a sweet name. Well, you know, one of the tricks is to know the dog. So sometimes it's a little hard. You know, I'll buy my favorite chicken-based treats for my friend's dog and then discover they're allergic to chicken. You know? So the trick of a good gift for a friend of yours or family member who has a beloved dog is to find out more. And you can be I've gotten really pretty sneaky about it. So I'll just start a conversation about, you know, I bought a new something for Maggie and Skippy and none of them paid it, you know, neither of them paid any attention to them. You know, Would Lila like that or something? Just ease your way into the conversation, because some dogs like that kind of chew toy and not that kind of chew toy. You know, some dogs like chicken-based treats and other dogs can't have them. So I think there's a gazillion things to buy out there. What's the pet food industry now? How many billions of dollars is it? I don't remember. It's a lot. But find out as much as you can about the dog, because they're individuals just like we are. And, you know, you've probably gotten presents that you don't like, you know?
Yeah,
I got a chew toy last year that I haven't touched all year.
Michael and Kakana will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I really appreciate the subject, and I love when Trish is on. Always an enjoyable show. My wife and I have experience bringing home puppies, older dogs, and two of the middle ones were rescues, and each one is a personality. It is so much fun. You have to adapt, because you have to listen to them, even though they can't talk, by their body language and who they are and what they like. We had one who was a four-year-old, and she was the toughest. It took her almost a month to she knew she was in her new home, and she was loved. We lost her young to cancer, and that still devastates me. Two years later, she died of cancer just when she was becoming a pet. We had to be so gentle, so careful, so soft with her, and listen to what she liked, what she didn't like. And we brought home our latest puppy, and he just came in the house and said, "Hey, I got a place of my own. I don't share with my siblings anymore.
I'm good."
Yeah, it's fun. So thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
I'm sorry about your dog. How sweet of you to be so patient. You know, some dogs are so frightened and so traumatized. It can take them so long to just relax. And it sounds like you were so patient. So
yeah,
thank you.
I'm thinking back to Lila, who when she came home to her new home, it was it seemed kind of surprising because she didn't bark at all and didn't bark for a month and a half before she let out her first little bark.
That's actually a big problem. I used to see clients who's like, we took the one who wasn't barking at the shelter. The one wasn't barking at the shelter because it was sort of stunned and in shock and scared. And, you know, it can take a certain amount of getting your paws on the ground. You know, I talk about the famous threes, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months.
So,
yeah.
There you go. Mary Ann in Oregon has a comment for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mary Ann.
Good morning. Thank you for your wonderful program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add to the list of marvelous books you're suggesting, and this one is an older one from 2002, written by a lady by the name of Kristen von Kreisler. Have you heard of it?
Well, what's the title? What's the title?
Beauty, sorry. Beauty in the Beast.
Ooh. I don't know that.
Oh, my goodness. It's from 2002, and it's multi-species, actual, true, verified accounts of marvelous things different animals have done for each other and for other species. A pot-bellied pig who saved his human's life, for instance.
Oh, that sounds...
Or a horse that protected a baby rabbit. I mean, these are true accounts of the dimension of emotion demonstrated by different species of animals, and it's just heartwarming.
Sounds Beauty like the perfect Beast. Holiday book, Beauty and the Beast. We all need to be uplifted, right?
Yeah.
Especially around the holidays, I think. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I wrote it down. I'm going to check it out. Thanks, Marianne.
Marianne, appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. Number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell for WPR News. We've been taking a look at some books for you for the holidays that involve your dog or other animal with our guest Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. And we're talking about other issues as well when it comes to dealing with your pet. Laura in Fond du Lac, as a matter of fact, emailed us. You can email to talk@WPR.org, or I should mention, you should also phone us at 800-642-1234. But for the email, Laura, her dog Molly began marking in their bed after losing her companion dog a couple of years ago. In fact, some of her other behaviors have become more like a male alpha dog. She marks several times during a walk, while she used to just urinate once. She also recently began going after the kitchen garbage. They now have to lock both their bedroom door and their kitchen cabinet before leaving the house. Since she usually only does these things when we're not at home, it's hard to know how to teach her not to do them. So wonders if you have any suggestions for that.
Well, yeah, I do. I have some thoughts. So Molly had another dog with her in the house, and these things happen when you're gone. So Molly is alone in the house for the first time, right? A lot of dogs have a lot of trouble with that, you know, and it's not crazy. I mean, they have no power, and they know it. They can't open the door, right? They can't, well, some of them can't get to the food. It sounds like Molly's figuring that out. But it's really common to see all kinds of behavioral problems that seem sort of here or, you know, hither, thither. Is that a word? Hither, thither? I don't know. Well, it sounded good.
Sounds good.
It does. Fun to say. But you know what I mean. You know, you just get this range of problems. So that I would actually treat it. I would hypothesize, you know, does she have separation anxiety? And that's treatable. I have a booklet on it. You can go to my website. There are other really good booklets on it, treating separation anxiety. That could help a lot. And it's not easy to do. It just takes a certain amount of patience and time, but it's usually very, very successful. So I would, you know, manage the garbage and just make it impossible for her to get at and pursue that whole question of, is this separation and anxiety related?
Yeah, it makes sense for sure. Jeremy in Mineral Point has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, how y'all doing? Love the show. I just wanted to express that, you know, I'm an animal lover. I have a dog and have had a dog for a long time. It means a lot to me. And I'm struggling lately with, like, animal lover identity. And I feel like sometimes when we hear animal lover, we think about people who extend this overwhelming love, care, respect, dignity, and so forth for animals. But sometimes the perception is that these things aren't elevated to the humanity piece, right? And connected back to all living things and living ecosystems. And so I feel a sort of pressure, a sort of shame, if you would, to kind of conceal to what extent I am super huge animal lover, particularly dogs and cats. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that, like, on TikTok, if y'all haven't had a chance to, like, really get into it, there's a lot of wonderful things there. And there's TikToks about dogs and cat lovers, particularly in the Black community, and to what extent, like, folks are caring and loving on these animals and, like, doing it in such a dignified, loving, caring way. Like, it's a beautiful thing to witness, and I empathize and connect with that because I am that person with my dog. So any thoughts on, like, animal lover, stigma, identity, and how to respond to this era that we're stepping in?
Yeah.
Can we have the rest of the hour? Because yeah. I love this question so much. Thank you so much for asking this question. So here's I don't have time to say all the thoughts swirling around in my head, except again, thank you for getting people thinking about this. I think for me, the best way I know to look at it is I actually learned at the university when I spent so much time studying primates and humans as primates and humans as animals. We are animals, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that people who self-describe as an animal lover, in the kindest, most humane ways possible, we need to keep reminding them that humans are animals too, and that we deserve love and respect and dignity. And, you know, we are a very complicated species, as we all know, and we all know that there's a downside to human behavior in many, many, many ways. And I think any way we can find to remind people, and, you know, I'm thinking of the books like of Franz de Waal, you know, and The Immense World, you know, who talk about sort of humans and our place as an animal in the rest of the animal world. You know, the more we can do that, I think the better the world will be. I will tell you, there is a segment of the positive dog trainer population that is, it's extreme in my view, in that if you don't use 100% positive reinforcement, they can get very negative, right? Ironically, and me and many of my colleagues, you know, talk about if you're invested in positive reinforcement, like I am, and I've spent my career, right?
Yeah.
Talking about its importance and how to use it and how to do it, then we need to do it for everybody. You know what this reminds me of? Karen London's fabulous book. Karen London is a friend and colleague, so full disclosure, but she wrote a great book titled Treat Everyone Like a Dog. And it's basically how to use the principles of positive reinforcement and other facets of the science of influencing the behavior of animals in a kind, compassionate way and to use them on people, whether it's your son or your spouse or most importantly, perhaps yourself, right? So that's, I just think it's so important for if you are, I love this question, if you are an animal lover, the person who irritates you at the, you know, at the mall, you know, or on the road, who's behind you and, you know, tailgating you, that's an animal too. And if you are an animal lover, then just keep in mind that person is an animal too. And don't even think about talking about or thinking about or doing something towards them that you would not do to a puppy that you found on the street.
Yeah. And what's the title of Karen's book?
Treat Everyone Like a Dog. Brilliant title, right? That should be on everybody's list too. It's dog, all dog lovers will love it. I have to tell you, I read it once a year or twice a year because it just reminds me, oh yeah, I could be doing that to help me change that bad habit I have. Not that I have any bad habits, Larry.
I was thinking back as you were talking to when we were hosting the national show, Calling All Pets, and someone calling and on this very topic, and she had some, I don't know, not the best of issues always with her husband. And so she had read about this very topic. And about 2 weeks into her experiment with her husband, he said, "You're running the same thing."
Are you training me?
The same thing you're doing with the dog.
Well, and you know, here's the irony. A lot of people will often say, like, well, isn't that manipulative? Well, when you use punishment, that's manipulative. Yeah. We're all trying to influence the behavior of those around us. That's our job, part of our jobs in life. And you can either do it in a kind, humane, effective way, or you can do the opposite. Jeremy, thank you for that question. You made my day.
Thanks, Jeremy. Dawn in Oshkosh will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Good morning, you two. I just wanted to, good segue, Larry. I just wanted to mention that I miss you two on Calling All Pets because you were a big part of my Saturday morning every weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a mastiff named Bruce, Dr. Bruce Banner, because he's named after the Hulk. And he's a broken mastiff. Aww. Love him to bits. He's an English mastiff, but he's a broken mastiff because they're supposed to guard hearth and home, but he's afraid of things like tipped over garbage cans, vacuum, brooms, barks at the rake. Anyways, I made a mistake with him when he was a puppy, and I would get on the floor and play with him and, you know, play bow to him, and he'd play bow back, and he'd bark at me. Well, now I can no longer get on the floor in my house or at my cabin without him bowing and barking at me and going crazy.
Because you trained him to do that.
I did. My own mistake. We need to train. You need to train me. So how can you train me to untrain him to do that?
Oh, we all do that. Every one of us has done. You know, the best dog trainer in the entire world has done that. I absolutely guarantee you. So, and so this is a good one. So think about, this is very solvable. So think about, what do you want him to do? So maybe you could teach him that when you lie down, so like a new trick, right? So when you lie down, he lies down. So I would, and it's very, you can do this in 2 weeks. So first of all, yeah, if you don't have a lie down, teach a lie down, right? You know, get a dog training book. I have a few out there. But just get a real positive reinforcement dog training book. I like to use food as a lure to get a dog to lie down. So get a dog to lie down on cue. You can use a visual cue. That's often very helpful. So just do that like 3 or 4 times a day. You're not lying down. You're not getting down, right? You're just teaching a good lie down. Or you're just sort of pumping it up. So, you know, mm-hmm. He's really mastered it. And then after you feel like he's really mastered it, then I want you to dip your shoulders down just, you know, maybe a foot, and then stand erect again. As you dip your shoulders down, I want you to say, lie down. Good boy. Lots of reinforcement, right? Maybe some treats. Great idea. Maybe some play. So what you're going to do is you're going to gradually turn the cue lie down from your voice to your body. So you dip your body, right? And you're going to ask him to lie down. And then you dip it farther and you ask him to lie down. And then you dip it farther, you ask him to lie down. And eventually at some point you're just going to crouch halfway down. You're going to look at him and wait. I'm waiting. And he's eventually going to go like, oh, I'm supposed to lie down. So you're going to just switch the cue. That's all. And if you can do it once, you can do it another way. And then what you might also want to be doing is adding more appropriate play. Maybe, you know, maybe teaching him find it outside, where you just throw some big treats around and teach him find it. It's really easy. It gets really busy. Great nose work. Really good for their brain and their bodies. So teach him another way to play that doesn't involve mauling you.
Dawn, there you go. I love that. That's a great piece of advice. Dawn, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Kathy emailed us. A family member she visits often has 4 large dogs, 2 Great Danes, 1 old lab, and a 3-year-old Golden. When you come to the home, all dogs come to greet you. However, the Golden runs in a circle and then starts playing with, this is Kathy emailing us, The Golden runs in a circle and then starts playing with Kathy's dogs, and she cannot get through and is afraid she will get knocked down. So what do you do about the Golden, which it's her friend.
It's not her dog, right?
Not her dog.
That's always trickier, you know?
Yeah.
Training your friend to train their dogs is a little trickier. I mean, the first thing to do is just not hesitate to say, you know, Marcia, would you do me a big favor? I'm just feeling nervous that I'm going to get knocked over, and that would not be good for me. And we would just hate the whole ambulance thing, and it would ruin our day. Would you mind putting the dogs in another room, or even just the Golden or something? You know, I've got my dogs trained when somebody comes to the door, even though they're really quite polite. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Skip is like, hello, hello. Maggie barks some. And I don't know if the person at the door is a dog lover, if I don't know who it is. So I just say, hey, go in the study, guys. And they run in the study because I trained them to do that on cue. I gave them lots of treats, and they'll just run in the study, shut the door. So life is simple. So it's pretty easy to teach a different behavior. What doesn't work is punishing the behavior you don't like. What does work and is antithetical to the way humans tend to think, what does work is figuring out what do I want the golden to do, and then creating a way where it makes it easy for him or her to do it, and then reinforcing that, and then challenging it a little bit more and more. So I would take your friend to lunch and go through all that and see what you can do. I will tell you, I have to use a cane now, and I tell all my friends, oh, get one. Oh, get a cane. It's great. Because people are so nice to you, you know. And so if you show up the door with a cane, your friend is going to be like, oh, dear. I apologize to people. I don't hope I haven't offended anybody who really needs one. I do, too. But I've learned to appreciate the good parts of it.
Mark in Nina. We'll go to you now. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I have a little Chihuahua mix, and he was a rescue dog, and I know he had some abuse in his past from what I see physically. I mean, he had frostbite marks on his ears, things like that. He wasn't treated. The ears have grown back. It's pretty cool. But anyway, my question is, when he's under a blanket, like in our bed or something, or he's under a blanket wrapped on the couch, a lot of times when you disturb him from under the blanket, he starts growling and becomes very aggressive and will try to bite. And I don't know if that has to do with something that happened in his former life, you know, like somebody put him under a blanket and beat him or something. I don't know, but I don't know how to kind of get a hold of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, and it might be related to his past, but frankly, I doubt it, just based on all those years of experience and knowing how many people who have little tiny dogs, Chihuahuas are high on the list, who are like, don't bother me now, you know? I mean, they're so tiny, and they so need to protect themselves, right? You know, they're mm-hmm. so vulnerable. So, I mean, the easy answer, and I know the answer of a lot of behaviorists is and trainers is going to be like, you know, he lost his bed privileges. I am all in on dogs sleeping on the bed. If you can still sleep well, there's some research that suggests people don't sleep as well. I don't sleep with my dogs in the bed just because I don't sleep as well. But dogs need... Basically, they need, you know, the bed privileges are a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing to think about is to create a little bed that's on the floor, you know, make it warm because it's Chihuahua, right? I mean, there's those so thin skin. So get a really cozy, you could even get a little, we used to have a little heated cat house that lived in the garage because we had a cat who had to be outside at that time. And so it's just you plugged it in, it was heated, and it was really cozy. So you might be able to teach your Chihuahua to sleep comfortably beside you, same room, right, down mm-hmm. on the floor, so there isn't that problem. That might be the easiest solution. It's going to be hard. Is there a quick piece of advice I can give you? No, there's not. I want there to be a quick piece of advice where I can say, do this, Mark, and everything will be fine. It's just going to be more complicated than that. I can't give you the quick answer is don't let him sleep on the bed. Mm-hmm. But hopefully here's a way to make that would work for you. To try and, you could possibly use counter conditioning to teach him that every time he's touched, something good happens, you know? So he's in bed, you touch him and you give him a treat, you touch him and you give him a treat. Problem is, I've had so many clients whose dogs were asleep when you touch them, and then they just sort of wake up growling, and that could be related to some kind of traumatic past. That's sort of harder to turn around. So yeah. I guess I'm going with my first idea, back to that heated, cozy bed. And if not, you could sleep in that. Your Chihuahua could sleep
sounds
in the
cozy,
big bed.
Sounds nice.
And you'll all be safe and fine.
Mark, thank you for calling. Mary in Neillsville, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. About 2 years ago, I adopted a rescue dog from a puppy mill. She's part Pomeranian and part Chihuahua. And it took a long time for her to bond. And when she bonded to me, she is bonded to me. She follows me from room to room. Mm. When I sit down, she must sit in my lap. But my biggest problem right now is she's suddenly gotten a little bit braver. And we had deer hunters, friends that stay with us. And this weekend, they were in the house staying overnight, and she stood on the end of my bed and barked continuously the entire night.
Oh, that was restful.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear. Is she normally afraid of strangers?
Yes.
Aww.
Normally, she used to run and hide, but now the last few months, she's gotten braver. She'll come running in the room and leap on my lap, and she'll bark at him the whole time that she's running. And then once she's on my lap, she's fine.
Because she's safe, right? She's up high. She's safe. She's got her big homey pack backup person there, right? So, this is fixable. Well,
maybe,
probably. I mean, the good news is I know what to tell you to do anyway, and I think you might help. It's very common for fearful dogs with traumatic histories to be sort of shut down at first, and it's the story that you're telling is so common. As they relax and get more comfortable, they are able to act on their fears, right? So I want you to start counter conditioning her to visitors. I have a booklet called Cautious Canine. There are other things out there. You can go to dogwise.com. They're written by other people. Some really good things out there. You're basically trying to change her emotional response to visitors. So you set it up. You figure out what treat you can give her that's good for her. It's not going to hurt her little tiny pieces because she's a Palm Chihuahua cross. But what's going to happen is visitors will come in the house and throw treats on the ground far away from them so she doesn't have to come close. And they don't get anywhere near her, basically, but they throw treats, and then they go away. And then they come back, and they do it again. I used to have counter conditioning parties for clients, so we'd get a line of, like, 10 people to come in, and each one would throw treats and then leave. So you gradually work your – I can't go through all the steps on the radio, but you gradually work your way up so that she becomes more and more comfortable with strange people, unfamiliar people coming into the house. And no longer is being driven by that fear of strangers. So good luck. It's very possible to turn this around. And good for you for rescuing this poor little thing.
Yes. Mary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Patricia McConnell is certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, author of at least 10 guides on training and behavior problems. Probably her most famous book is The Other End of the Leash, which is published in, 13 languages?
Yes, I always forget. It's 13 or 14. Yeah, it's done well.
It's done well, and there's a reason for it. It's a wonderful book. Our guest today, and again, you can join in. I hope you will. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at noon today, it's all about cats with Dr. Angie Ruppel, who's founded a mobile clinic that's helping our rural cats in particular. And we'll be talking about the importance of cat neutering and spaying. So that coming up at noon right now. Patricia McConnell with us. Yeah, that'd be good.
Sounds like a great show. Yay for her for having a mobile clinic, going to rural areas.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
fabulous.
John emailed us with a question. Facebook video reels now have a number of examples of wild animals going to humans for help to rescue another animal in distress. What's the probability that these examples are occurring because the animals have been previously exposed to humans as rescued wildlife? So the rescued animal turns around and goes to a human for help.
That's a really interesting question. Here's my guess, and that's all it is. Guess is that that's not that common. You know, some of the examples I've seen, it's like, you know, what was the possibility that that dolphin actually escaped from SeaWorld or something, yeah. You know? So I'm always cautious because of AI now. I mean, I've seen so many things lately that have been like, yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty cautious. However, that does not mean there aren't very credible examples of that happening, you know, either one dog or individual or, you know, any kind of wildlife trying to enlist a human's help in getting a net off of a, you know, whale or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So my guess is it's more about most of the animals I've seen do it. And now I wish I could go back and, like, you know, watch 100, yeah. 100 reels. But very often the animals involved are social animals. So if you look at the ethology of social animals, you know, there's a genetic predisposition to look to other individual creatures, right, animals, mm-hmm. for some kind of help. And so that's my best guess is, you know, does it happen with solitary animals? I mean, would a panda, for example, do that? You know, they're pretty solitary animals. I don't know. That's my best guess, is that it has something to do with the social nature, mm-hmm. of the animals who do that. And it's like, well, you're not a wolf, you know, or you're not a moose, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever. But, well, moose is not a great example, but y'all get the idea here.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you're not my species, but you're something, right? Mm-hmm. Or perhaps they have observed humans doing things that made it clear that we have all kinds of powers that other animals don't. That's a research. I love
that.
So many good questions.
Idea. Yeah.
I love this. I have a terrible answer to this question, but I love this question. We're all going to have to think about this for a while.
I like your thesis, your theory on social animals being the ones that are more likely to do that.
You're kind to call it a thesis. It's a wild ass guess, but it's the best one I can come up with right now. Great question, though. Thank you, John.
Jerry in Sun Prairie has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I have a 14-month-old cockapoo, and we play with him, and we've got these squeakers on that. And we throw him, and he'll go get him, and that, and we'll be playing back and forth and that. And my girlfriend will do the same thing, you know, we'll take turns and that. He'll bring him over. But then all of a sudden, he'll just drop it, and then he'll start pulling at my girlfriend's pant legs and pulling on it, trying to bite her shoe.
Whoa.
Or something like that.
Whoa.
And, yeah, and no reason. I mean, because we're playing with them, you know, and stuff like that. And that. And then the second one is, he has a tendency that if, let's say, he gets a hold of a sock or something like that, or a shoe, or something he's not supposed to, something of ours, like, you know, like a towel, and that. And all of a sudden, he'll, you know, he won't give it back.
Sure.
He just sits there and growls. He just growls it.
Yeah.
He gets possessive, right?
Yeah.
My sock. Well, let's talk about your poor girlfriend first. Because here's my guess, is that what it sounds like is that your cockapoo is getting hyper-aroused. Arousal is a big issue and often a very problematic issue with our dogs. Again, you know, they don't have a lot to do, right, mm-hmm. compared to a wild canid that, you know, is their evolutionary background. And so some of these games where they're fetching toys, for example, with squeakers, they can get really aroused. And then somehow that arousal just, there's just like, I don't know, it's like a bunch of teenagers at a rave or something. It's mm-hmm. just too much excess energy, right? It just sort of spills around and gets into big trouble. So what I would think about is I would try only playing this way a short period of time. And then I would have a cutoff signal that animals use to each other all the time, which basically is just like, that's enough. That's enough. Not playing anymore. So I would say, that's enough. And then I would get up and walk, just sort of change the scenario, you know, mm-hmm. just get up, walk somewhere else, go outside, maybe play a little game outside, like find it again. That's my favorite trick right mm-hmm. now. This is so useful for so many dogs. And see, my hope is that that will solve that problem, because I think your cockapoo is just getting over aroused and your girlfriend is an easier target than you are. So that's that part. And then the possession, very common problem with some dogs. So you, what you need to do is you need to teach your dog, I call it leave it. I say leave it. And you can do it starting with something that's not that special for him, right? You know, maybe he's just sniffing the ground or something, and you have a great treat in the hand behind your back, and you say, leave it, and he just looks at you like, what? And you say, good, and you give him the treat. And it's like, oh, because what happened is he looked away from what he was looking at. So you start with just looking at things, and then you gradually, over a period of weeks and months, work your way up to there's an object in his mouth, you know, and eventually mm-hmm. something he really, really loves. And here's the hard part. When you get to the point where he has a sock in his mouth and you've progressed so far that you say, leave it, and he drops it, you say, okay, and let him take the sock back, because that's what he really wants. That's the best way to use positive reinforcement, is figure out what an animal wants, and often it's the problem behavior. So Skip, when I first got him, he was 3.5. He's a big, strong dog. He would practically knock me over going out the door to go to the barn, because he loves it more than anything, and he hits 25 miles an hour in 10 strides, right? Not that I'd ever exaggerate, but pretty close, right? So I taught him to wait at the door by using running to the barn as a reinforcement. I'd say, wait, and he'd just pause and look at me like, what? And then I'd say, go to the barn. And then I gradually just made him wait, asked him to wait longer and longer. So that's the way you're going to work with the possessive part, okay? But basically start with treats, start easy, create a win, because I don't want somebody to get bitten here, because, you know, that would be bad. We don't want that to happen.
No, we don't. Jerry, thank you so much for calling. Annie in Rhinelander says her husband really wants to get a dog. She's never been a dog owner. Really nervous about getting a dog and is worried she won't like the experience of being a dog owner. Any words of encouragement?
Yes, yes and no. I mean, I would never want to talk somebody into getting a dog, you know? I would, what I would encourage you to do is to spend some more time around other people's dogs. You know, if you're nervous about getting a dog, I mean, I guess my question, and we don't have time. Again, I need an hour, Larry. I'm sorry. You keep doing this to me. But what I want to know is, what scares you? You know, is it the dogs themselves? Or is it that you won't be a good enough owner, you know, human, handler? You know, figure out what scares you and start working at it that way. You know, it might be that you don't want all the responsibility, and it is a lot. There's no way around it. We all see people who have dogs who shouldn't, frankly. Mm-hmm. So think about what it is that scares you, and then follow along that line, you know. And I would go out of your way to spend time with other people's dogs. You might think about fostering a dog, but I caution you about, like, bringing in, like, a rescue dog who might have a difficult past.
Yeah.
What you might want to do is, say you have a friend who has just the sweetest golden retriever in the world, right? Or the sweetest little poodle. Ask him if they could stay in your, you know, can you come over and spend the night with your dog? See what it's like to have, they're responsible for the dog, you're not. And you'll get a sense of what it's like to have a dog in your home. So those are some thoughts for you to pursue.
I think those are some really good thoughts.
I hope so.
And here we are, out of time, Patricia. This has been such a quick hour. I want to thank you so much.
Oh, it's always fun, Larry.
And we hopefully you'll consent to doing it again.
Oh, just twist my arm. It'll be so hard. Happy holidays, everybody.
Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, author of many books and guides on training and behavior. Always great to have her with us, and she will come back and we will do this all over again. Coming up, as I said, we're going to talk about spaying and neutering your cats, among other things, with our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.